Bill Nye is a scientist, comedian, teacher, and author, a combination of talents that is summed up rather nicely by his television title, Bill Nye the Science Guy. His program is produced in Seattle by KCTS Channel 9 and distributed nationally by Buena Vista Television as Disney presents Bill Nye the Science Guy. He grew up in Washington, D.C., got a degree in mechanical engineering from Cornell University, and ended up in Seattle working as a Boeing engineer by day and stand-up comedian at night. Has a new book out called Bill Nye the Science Guy's Big Blast of Science, and he joins us. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, it is so good to be here.
Yeah, you studied engineering at Cornell University and had an opportunity to study with another personality who brought science to mass media, and that was Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
What kind of influence did he have on you as a teacher and maybe even as a performer?
Well, as a performer, see, he understands as well as anyone that when you're teaching school, you're on stage. And I can digress on and on about that, but it's a fundamental thing. If you're going to teach people, I think you have to understand that you're on stage for sure. And he was great at that. And it was back in the days when
billions and billions.
Well, he was into billions and billions as much as the next guy. But it was before he was this gigastar. You know, he was just this guy. He was very well known, and he was getting a lot of popularity on account of the Voyager missions to Mars, which were, may I simply say, amazing. Mm-hmm. They were unbelievable. They were astonishing. People go to another planet. Sagan and his associate Steve Soder and these guys predict that the Martian sky will be pink. You know, and then you take a photo. You look at a postcard from Mars. Wish you were here. Pink sky. Very cool. Anyway, he'd show up every day with these photographs from space that now you can buy in UW bookstore or something, you know, but these pictures that were just amazing, mm-hmm. and it was just riveting. His lectures were really good, yeah. Really good.
Hard to get in his classes at that time.
Well,
I guess it must have been,
but yeah. You know, I took astronomy from him. It was a huge class. Yeah. It was 350 people or something. It wasn't a big deal. I mean, but I went to see him at my 10-year reunion. Professor Sagan, you remember me? No, but he did remember my paper. He was very, or he seemed like he remembered my paper. He was very nice about it. And he gave me a piece of advice, which was fantastic. It really did influence me. You brought this up. And it was, he said, you don't want to teach technology so much as pure science. He said, and the verb he used, kids resonate to pure science. Mm. In other words, they are really in tune with pure science. And so it was a discussion we had about bridges and bridge building and how people like bridges. They like airplane wings and things and insect wings. And he said, you know, teach pure science, don't teach technology. That was a direct influence from Carl. I call him Carl, from Professor Sagan, whatever the heck.
Talk about some of the other people that maybe influenced you as part of the 30-something generation. There was Mr. Wizard. Don Herbert, his name?
Don Herbert, yeah. Don. Watched him this morning for a few moments. I had seen it before. Anyway, Don Herbert is like he's a genius. For those of you who don't know Mr. Wizard, he was a guy that, I'm almost 40, and he was a guy that taught science to me when I was a kid on television, and he was the first person, at least he was the most accessible person to me who was teaching science on television. Yeah. And he still does it, or these shows that are airing now on Nickelodeon are still the old style. It's very deliberate, you know. It's like your grandfather is explaining to you this kind of remarkable thing, and mm-hmm. you can watch. And here's the deal. If you watch Mr. Wizard, let's say you're a boy of European descent, and you are watching Mr. Wizard, then you have potentially an interest in science already. So you watch Mr. Wizard, and then you become even more interested in science. It's fascinating what this guy's doing. You know, okay, he's putting out a candle with a balloon without touching it, you know, or he's doing he's counting balls at the speed of light or whatever. Anyway, it's fascinating. But if you come to the show without sharing that culture and without an interest in science, then in general, and this is not my idea. This was presented to me. Studies have been done. That in general, statistics prove. That you don't. Now, when I say statistics prove, everybody, okay, please. You know, I'm a little gag there, a little irony. You don't get any more out of it. If you don't come with an interest in science, then you don't get any, what educators call, you don't get any lift. Your mm-hmm. education or your what you've learned hasn't been raised.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do on this television show that I'm working on, which is on Channel 9 here and Channel 11, is get people who may not already have that compelling interest in science and get those guys excited, those people, kids, particularly girls, and particularly kids of color.
Which is certainly reflected in your show with the music videos and the people who do the experiments. That's obviously important to you.
Oh, it's very important to me. Yeah, because, see, here's the thing. I'm, you know, this European descent guy, and I was raised where science was the coolest thing, and I went to engineering school, and I loved bicycles and messing around with airplanes, and that was all great. But girls and kids of color are traditionally excluded from this. And, you know, that's okay for your society 50 years ago or something, but in the future, the society is not going to be the same European male, same Caucasian male majority that it is now. And so if you don't have kids of color and girls interested in science now, then you will not have enough scientists in the future, because women and people of color are going to be far more prevalent. What's the word? The higher population in the workplace. Mm-hmm. There'll be a lot more people like that in the workplace. And if we don't have enough scientists, we're going to be... The world's going to go to heck, by gosh.
Talking about Don Herbert, Mr. Wizard, I was curious if when you started doing this, the science guy character, if it was kind of a gentle parody on him or sort of how that character developed.
Well, you know, one of the features of traditional dorky scientists is their attitude that they know better. You know, so one day there used to be a guy. Used to be the like extremely popular radio show. I mean, KOW certainly is the most important radio station ever. I mean, there's no question about that.
Statistics,
statistics prove that. But Ross Schaefer, who's back in town now, you know, working on Cairo, he had a radio show that was extremely popular. Do you remember this? There were 6 months where Ross Schaefer's radio show was the greatest thing. It was cool. He obviously was working very hard on it. Anyway, he had this. You know, he'd really produced the show, all these comedy bits and stuff. Anyway, he referred one day to gigawatts, which was what the guy on Back to the Future, Doc with Marty, yeah, on Back to the Future was working with, and he referred to gigawatts. And I called him and I said, Ross, you know, it's not, people don't say gigawatts, they say gigawatts. Gigawatts is the preferred, I mean, come on, gigawatts. And he said, "What, you know, what are you, Bill Nye, the science guy?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm Bill Nye, the science guy." And then it just sort of took off from there. And at that time, I was working as an engineer. I was also doing stand-up comedy at night, and I would take naps in the afternoon, which I noticed you doing. No, I'm just a little bit. So then I also was volunteering at the Pacific Science Center doing science demonstrations. The killer, the payoff, the deadly, unbeatable gag being to take the marshmallows out of the liquid nitrogen, chew them carefully. It takes a little practice. Chew them carefully, and steam will come out of your nose. You can't beat that. Steam coming out of the nose. It's just
gets
cool.
Them every time.
It's just fascinating. All right, anyway. So I realized that this is what I really wanted to be doing, was getting people interested in science. And so it's taken years to reach this point.
Well, wow. At first though, it was a comedy routine. I mean, at what point did it take on more of an educational mission, or did
I
that
guess,
sort of?
Well, I'll tell you, it was a comedy routine to be sure, because I guess fundamentally those things are just cool to me. The guy chews marshmallow and steam comes out of his nose. That just cracks me up. I'm sorry, that's hilarious. Or it is fascinating to watch lead melt faster than ice made of water. I mean, you just wouldn't expect that to happen, but there you go. Fascinating to watch oil drums collapse. You can't beat that. But on top of that, I had this feeling that these people I'm working with, these are, you know, comedy writers, actors, and people who weren't in my immediate peer group, weren't engineers. You know, these would be what are traditionally called the bean counters. Again, these guys have very little fundamental understanding of science. It's kind of weird. I mean, it was just kind of weirded me out. You know, so you're saying if you plug electricity into the hydraulic line, the plane won't, you know, fly? No, it won't. It's not that, you know, it's just, I'm sorry, I'm on a tangent here, but it's like, I'm always on a tangent. But the thing is, it just really disturbed me that people who are making decisions, people who are going to the polls to vote every year, don't have this fundamental understanding of science. And yet here we are. The world certainly, by any reasonable standard, is overpopulated. There's all this talk about hunger. There's all this talk about human immunodeficiency viruses. And all these problems are fundamentally, to me, science problems.
Yeah.
And without scientists, you're not going to be able to solve them.
Yeah. Well, speaking of tangents. I mean, yeah. In some way, that's
Tangent Man.
That's what the show is about. I was watching Tuesday Show, which compression and tension the two fundamental. Yeah,
it sunk in. There it is.
I was just curious about all the people that you were dealing with in that show. You had a bridge engineer in New York, a woman who worked with Adobe buildings, some sandcastle builders, a person who made medical models. It was all very related, but I wonder when you go out and find those people, if that's just sort of serendipity, if you have these things produced and you put them together, or how you go about
the
show.
That's just, you're making my day. That you perceive it as serendipity. That's just great. The idea is that... You know, I found this guy who makes artificial limb prostheses. You know, okay, hey, this would be really great for the structure show. You know, and so it's sort of serendipity, but there's clearly a plan. And that here's the deal, here's what we're selling. All right,
is that, go ahead, Ross.
Go ahead. Oh, I see. Yeah.
Little joke there.
Here's the deal. I can't do. He has that voice. I can't do it. Sorry, I'm not not equipped. But anyway, I haven't put in the hours. So every show has what we call learning objectives. And we're here on the campus of the University of Washington. And the idea, a learning objective is a technical word that means if you take this lecture, listen to this lecture, go to this class, take this laboratory course, whatever, at the end of the class, the course, or the television show, the radio broadcast, whatever, someone can ask you what happened, you know, what did you learn? And he'll be able to tell you structures are fundamentally associated with tension and compression, right? Or form follows function is a great thing, yeah. So if you get that out of the show, that's great. Anyway, the deal being that if you get everyone on the staff, everyone at the show agrees that these are the learning objectives, this is what we're trying to do, then you can find people. It's not that difficult to go looking in the right places for people that make artificial limbs, which are designed by exactly the same principles as, in this case, literally the Brooklyn Bridge or the Verrazano Narrows Bridge.
Right.
Yeah. Or the Tacoma Narrows Bridge. You know, or Grand Coulee Dam, or any of these things, they're all the same idea. Or bird wings, they're all the same structural idea. And that, to me, that's just so compelling. And it's all based on learning objectives that we agree are achievable. Me and the team.
Yeah.
Team and I.
Bill's Way Cool Science Show is produced by KCTS and airs Tuesday nights at 7:30 on Channel 9. And his new book published by Addison Wesley is called Bill Nye, the Science Guy's Big Blast of Science. How long does it take you to put together a typical show? I mean, the editing and the pacing are things that I marvel at.
Well, that's a very good question. So we started making 26 shows in May. And we started shooting with photographing in July or so. And so then we do now one about every 2 weeks, every 10 days and stuff like that. But so it takes, either way you look at it, it takes 4 months or it takes a week and a half. Depends how you count. And so the deal is, you've seen the show, right? We change the channel for you. You don't have to use your remote control. We'll take care. You don't like this bit right here? Just wait a second. Wait a few seconds and it'll change to something else. And that is done. Traditionally, that would be done with conventional video editing, which is similar to conventional film editing, which is what you'd imagine, where you put one tape on this side and you copy it to the master tape on the other side. That would be the fundamental idea. But now there's a system that's kind of Macintosh computer-based where you can digitize the video. The video goes into a digital memory on a hard drive, and then you can access that, you can address that, and you can hook the show together in any order you want. So then that's not really the show. That's a list of time codes from the tape, and then you combine the time codes on the master later on. So it's done by computer. Mm-hmm. Come on.
A show in, worship there's a show word. In itself. Yeah.
Yeah. What is a show in it? It would be, yeah.
What is your target audience for the Science Guy show? Well, who are you thinking about as you
I'm not trying to get anybody to feel bad or anything, but the target audience is fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And the reason fourth grade is chosen is because statistics prove. No, it's just that it's generally accepted right now at the current level of understanding that fourth grade is the last time a person will be interested in science. If someone's interested in science at fourth grade, they'll stay interested in science their whole lives. But if they're kind of borderline, if they're at risk, as we say, they're at risk, then they will veer off and become some sick, twisted occupation like radio DJ or something. No, they'll... They won't stay interested in science, although you probably have an interest in science, working in radio.
I do, and in the book, the Big Blast of Science book, I was reading it last night, your explanations of AM and FM, and it was quite interesting to
me. Good, classicals.
Shows like yours and some of the great cartoons, I think of Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Oh, man, they play that level.
Well,
oh,
they
boy.
Do. They play on two levels, and I wonder if
I
you're...
I knew that's what you're driving at.
Right. Are you... playing to that
oh,
more
yeah, that's
sophisticated
definitely.
Audience?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The goal, Rocky and Bullwinkle, would be the ultimate. You know, if you could do something, you know, please buy war bonds in the middle of this discussion about the what's the motto you versus the Mud City Manglers. Oh, my goodness. But anyway, yeah, there's definitely jokes included exclusively for grown-ups. I mean, there's, you know, that's the idea. References, not so much historical references, but just drier, you know, the word might be wry references. And that's got to be done. You have to do it for two reasons. First of all, you want the parents to watch it with their kid. I mean, that's some sort of pure goal idea. But the other thing is it's just more fun that way.
Yeah.
It's
good. Fun for
show's
you.
Show's got to be fun for everybody, yeah.
And the people that put it together.
And you can't resist it. I mean, this stuff happens. You can't resist it. But I'll tell you, the funniest thing, I think, so far, did you see the show about skin?
I don't think I caught that one.
Well, no matter. It's just, you know, it's the skin protects you, keeps you warm. Protects you from the sun, whatever, and it protects you from weather, like big buckets of water. And then the guy gets hit with big buckets of water, and it comes back three or four times, and it's just silly, but it's, I don't know, it's funny.
Yeah. You have quite a high-powered board of advisors who are associated with the show.
Yeah.
How active are they in suggesting ideas and reviewing the show?
Oh, they're very active. Yeah. So here's what we do. We start out, here's what we did. We started out having a big meeting. Had a big meeting. Yeah.
Take a meeting.
Yeah, we took a meeting. You write jokes, take meetings, and make calls. That's after you do that, there isn't much left, really. So we had meetings about what we thought would be reasonable topics. Then we had many, many. We used to write letters, but now, of course, we send faxes. Many, many communications about how do you feel about these topics, Mr. Advisor, Ms. Advisor? Do you think this is appropriate? Mm-hmm, yeah. So then we get it down to where we have 26 topics, 26 learning objectives, 26 sets of learning objectives. And then each script is sent to at least two advisors. So there's 12 altogether. So there's physicians, there's a physicist in Urbana, you know, at University of Chicago, and there's astronomer at Princeton, and then there's the fast plants guy in Wisconsin and all these guys, and you can – botanist. So you send the appropriate script to the appropriate couple advisors. Many scripts go to four advisors, but all of them go to at least two.
Okay.
So then those people, they're so into it. God, they're so into it. They send you this long thing back, and their criticisms are often just great. They're just great. These people – it's the kind of thing when you're associated with public broadcasting, with KCTS – You can make a phone call and find 12 of these people. Okay. You know, he's a friend of mine. You know, and so it's just great. It's just the advisors are great.
Yeah. We've been talking with Bill Nye, the science guy, on KUW's Weekday. He has got a new book out, Bill Nye, the Science Guy's Big Blast of Science. And I want to thank you for joining us on Weekday
this morning.
Oh,
thank you.